Blog Talk Radio. Folks, welcome to Right from the Left Coast. If anyone can hear me, please let me know in the chat room. My name is Linda, and I am broadcasting from what is pretty much close to hell this week. We've got a huge heat wave. I'm in Oceanside. It is beautiful. The clouds are gone. Part of the storm has gone from, I believe, somewhere in, I don't know which side of Mexico, the Gulf. I don't know whether it's Baja. But anyway, it's a mess. It's about 90 degrees in the house. About 94 outside. It's been pretty crazy. So I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that Jesus knows I love him so I don't have to go to the hot place because I have a pretty good glimpse of what it feels like. It's been nuts. Anyway, welcome to the show. Welcome, Mike and Ron. Of course, I have to go back and forth. And they're talking in the chat about the monetary system, et cetera, and the other countries. So want to get into my scripture. I've got a lot to cover. I only have an hour, and I apologize because I have to go to this huge meeting. We are fixing to sue the owners of this mobile home park, and our attorney was here yesterday on the other side, so I went to that one. Today they're coming to my clubhouse, and we will be handed an attorney-client agreement paper. He has been explaining. Of course, I have everything's wrong here. Let's see if I can find it. I know where. I'm losing my place. That's because the fans are going. Anyway, thank you for tuning in, Rod. Thanks for coming in. I hope others can get in. BTR is completely crazy. I can't see the board right now because I'm watching the chat. But I want to go through some of the really cool scriptures that I got to learn this past Sunday. This is Ecclesiasticus 27, 30 to 28, and then 30 and 28, verse 7. Anger and wrath, these also are abominations, yet a sinner holds on to them. The vengeful will face the Lord's vengeance, for he keeps a strict account of their sins. Forgive your neighbor the wrong he has done, and then your sins will be pardoned when you pray. Does anyone harbor anger against another and expect healing from the Lord? If one has no mercy toward another like himself, can he then seek pardon for his own sins? If a mere mortal harbors wrath, who will make an atoning sacrifice for his sins? Remember the end of your life and set enmity aside. Remember corruption and death and be true to the commandments. Remember the commandments and do not be angry with your neighbor. Remember the covenant of the Most High and overlook faults. So that's a good one. I want to go to the next one, the last one, and this is Matthew 18, 21 through 35. Then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me? And I forgive him. As many as seven times? Jesus saith to him, I do not say to you seven times, but 77 times. Therefore the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle, one was brought to him, who owed him 10,000 talents. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and payment to be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. And out of pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. But when that same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, pay what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, have patience with me, and I will pay you. But the first servant refused and went and put him in prison until he should pay the debt. When his fellow servants saw what had taken place, they were greatly distressed, and they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. Then his master summoned him and said to him, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you pleaded with me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" And in anger, his master delivered him to the jailers until he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart. So I hope you guys can hear me. I'm not sure. I'm going to go back to the studio for a second. Okay. I think I have Ron on the line. Welcome, sir.
Hey, it's just me. I called in to listen. So.
Okay, great. So let me...
I'll chime in in a minute.
Absolutely. So I don't know if you got to hear any of the scriptures, but there were pretty good lessons about the commandments that Jesus said were the greatest of these, forgiving people, having mercy, and treating one's neighbor as oneself. Those are so important. And it's throughout the Bible. It's not just one place or another. But, of course, when Christ speaks it, you know, we better listen, right? So... anyway, I'm going to go back a little bit to the chat room. Again, if anybody can call in, welcome Yola and Nick. We're always doing, hi Yola, hi Nick. We don't know who's on, but welcome both, of course. Going back a little bit, I only got to do a short show again yesterday and one today. I was filling in for Bill. He was out of town. I guess he and Joe had a service to go to for the pastor who had presided over their nuptials. And so, anyway, so that's where we are today. And we, like I said, we have this meeting because the attorneys are trying to help the people. Now, this is kind of the first stage. If you sign an agreement with the attorney, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to go to court because there's so many people in these parks. They have a great case. They want to take the case. But we need X amount of people to actually sign up. And it's not even called a class action because each name will be kind of individual. I don't know why that works that way, but there's different types of suits that go forth. But this is contingency, of course. If we lose, then, you know, we're liable for the attorney's fees. We're not liable for any other damages except attorney's fees and whatever they do. So these people, this is primarily what they deal with. They understand mobile home residency law. They're probably one of the few people in California that do. And in 30 years, they have never lost a case against a park owner, ever. So that's pretty good odds. Although, you still have a little trepidation, you know. I mean, thinking about signing your life away, but again,
you are dealing with lawyers. So
yes. So I think it's the only recourse because these parks eventually are going to go away, and if there can be anything gotten from it, that will be great. Hopefully, you know, I'm just going to take this one day at a time. And the window of opportunity will close within about 3 years because, like I said, these parks are going to go away one way or another. They're pushing Agenda 21 up one side and down the other, which brings me to this article, which I have to kind of preface with the past week's dealings with the action meetings and the city council and that speech that I read to them, which I had given you guys, I think, the day of prior to my going down there. And there were after the speech, Councilman Feller, he's really a nice guy. He's one of the ones I actually like, and he's pretty down to earth, and he's a non-Keynesian Marxist theorist in economics. So he and I are on the same page on many things. although he did not know who von Mises was, so I had to explain it to him, and I'll get to that in a second. But so he was pulling me aside and we were whispering back and forth and he says, "And remember the people that you're trying to vote for," he says, "are so far much more liberal than others that you're dealing with." And I said, "Oh, I know." He says, "Try not to be a one trick pony on Agenda 21 because a lot of people, they stop listening or they on the dais or the ones in the audience don't have a clue as to what you're talking about." So we had to stop talking because we would have been kicked out of the meeting, you know, both of us, council member and constituent. So I went back and I thought, okay, so I talked to my friend Sue afterwards. And subsequently, we had left too soon, but they did record it on KOCT, so we got to see it later. But council member Feline and Kern, who are up for re-election, and we're going tooth and nail after them because their arrogance just, you know, sometimes – they can be fiscally sound, and sometimes they just lie through their teeth like most politicians do, even on a city council level, and this is very prevalent in California. So, you know, we watched the meltdown. Mayor Wood was, you know, pontificating, you know, and they can't stand Mayor Wood because they call him a rhino, long and short. He's a pretty good guy. He was on the police force for 30 years in Oceanside, and I'll tell you one thing about him. He's a people person, and he's got a great sense of humor. Well, working vice in that time era in Oceanside.
He's institutionalized.
It's true, but if you're a vice cop down on Hill Street before they cleaned up the prostitution, let me tell you, you better have a sense of humor. I'm trying to rescue some of these boys coming out of Camp Pendleton, out of boot camp, first time, and they came from the Iowa farms and stuff. They were hanging on their arms somebody that they thought was a Sheila, and they weren't. So, again, many fun stories, but yeah, it's so true. So then, after this thing was over, then the following Sunday we had an action meeting. So this is all the neighborhoods, and the president of Action is going up against these two guys, Dana Corso. She's going up against them for city council in November, along with Chuck Lowry, who I have a lot of reservations. He is a Democrat, and he's, you know, he doesn't understand the harm of Agenda 21. So it's crazy, you know. So at this meeting, at the end of the meeting, I was going to go up and talk to Thomas Krause, who's running for assembly against Rocky Chavez, whom I can't stand. In the primary, he was running unopposed, but people wrote in Thomas's name, so now he's in the general. Okay, that's cool. But since I didn't know Thomas's name, in the write-in place, I put Vladimir Lenin because I can't. That's how much I hate Rocky Chavez. Yeah, I had a blast with that. So I can't help it. You know, I got to do it. It gets to the point, you know, because we, when I'm working the polls, I have to use a mail-in ballot because I, you know, there's no other time for me to mark my choices, especially on local issues. And, you know, in the general, there's going to be a lot of propositions and things that are important, plus city councils, and, you know, all the rest of the nonsense. But, you know, at least I'm out there and I'm trying to be seen and heard. So what I did was later I did call, I think it was, or I contacted that councilman who pulled me aside, his office. These guys are pretty cool. They're very open. And I asked for a private meeting. So she got back to me, the aide got back to me and says, let us know what day and let's, you know, I said, how about Tuesday, da da da. And she says, Tuesday, 9 o'clock at Coco's. Perfect. So we got that. And I did meet with him, and it was interesting to know about his background. He's works with the churches. He made sure we were praying before we ate our food. And I mean, you know, he's a pretty cool guy. And like I said, I'm going to read this later, but this talking about this person who's a fellow at the Von Mises Institute. And he says, I'm not familiar with Von Mises. I said, well, I gave him a short history of, you know, of course I've been reading Hayek and Adam Smith and have done the Von Mises and understanding that this is the Austrian school of economic theory as opposed to Marxist and Keynesian. And he says, oh, gotcha. It's okay. So then he figured that part out because I was reading the preface to the principles of 1798, and this is Thomas E. Woods, and he's the PhD of the Von Mises Institute, basically talking about the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions. And if you haven't read them, folks, and I know, Ron, you've probably gotten into a lot of that stuff.
Nullify!
I would suggest you do, because it's really some really good principles that we need to keep in our hearts and minds and fight back again. I guess Rod had to leave. Unfortunately, he might be. I don't know what his weather is like there, but if it's anything like this, I get it. He needs to find a bathtub filled with ice. But anyway, so then the action meeting. So this girl, as I was trying to make my way to Thomas, which I did speak to him a little bit prior, and that was good because he's, like I said, he's going up against one of my foes. And she was complimenting me on my weight loss, and I says, okay, cool. So she says, I didn't understand your speech. Well, she's a far leftist, and I know this because I've heard her before. I mean, she doesn't do any homework. She just takes she's very, very in that liberal camp where they just take it as gospel. They listen to NBC and PMS LSD and all these other people and CNN, and they just swallow it. They do no research whatsoever on anything. But she was open to what I was saying because I tried to break the speech down to her, talking about, you know, the herding into the cities, Sandag, all of these different things, you know, that they want people off the rural farms and rural areas. And we have a common friend at Action, and she and her family own one of the avocado farms right here in Oceanside. And I says, why do you think they're going after her farm? I says, they don't want this stuff. And they're trying to make everything homogenized. They're taking away the individual city's charm. They're doing, you know, they're herding people off these lands into these high-density areas along the transportation corridors. And so apparently one of her libtard things clicked in her head, and she says, oh, well, isn't that good? We can get rid of the CO2. And I looked at her and I said, CO2 is what you exhale. I said, plants love it. I said, they give off oxygen. We breathe oxygen. I went further, and I said, she was actually writing this. No, you're going to love this. And she's married to a Middle Easterner, and it's a long story. It's a long story. But anyway, which I didn't know until because my friend –
Allahu Akbar, right?
my friend, the councilman, enlightened me because he makes it his business to know what's going on, who his enemies are. And I said, yeah, I have to do those things too. So anyway, he also, it was like having almost the same conversation I had a few months ago when I talked about those vision meetings, and I was tearing my hair out because this guy was holding up some textbook written by the Progressive Teachers Union, you know, talking about global warming. And because they're all coming from the same camp. And this particular individual I mentioned to the council member over breakfast, and he says, oh my God, he says, I have to deal with him at Sandag all the time. And I says, yes, well, you know what I'm talking about. So with this conversation with this woman who didn't understand my speech, as I'm trying to break it down, and I said, look, I said, all this stuff's a lie. I says, what they're trying to confuse you is that carbon monoxide does come out of cars. I says, but you have to be in an enclosed garage with a tube in your car to kill yourself, because when you're out on the road, it dissipates, you know.
Well, and I would point out, and I don't want to slow your roll here, but.
Oh, my God. Well, it's okay. Go ahead, because I got plenty.
The new cars that are out since 2000,
mm-hmm.
You couldn't kill yourself with a hose if you ran it inside the car and rolled the windows up. You would be depressed. You would burn an entire tank of gas and still be very much alive, because there is not enough toxic fumes coming out of the exhaust pipe of a modern car. I used to do emissions testing, and you can put a tailpipe sniffer up the tailpipe in one of these new cars. The CO2 level and the CO levels are practically zero.
Because of all the stuff they've done to, you know, I know, because of
I mean, as a percent, CO is like 0.01%.
Well, see,
and
the
CO2
thing
is zero.
Here's basically what happens when you have people that you're dealing with like this, because they, I swear to God, they've all flunked third grade science class because they're not making any sense when they speak. They don't know what they're talking about. So I was doing my best to educate them, and lo and behold, I think it was 1 or 2 days later, out comes this, in fact, that night, here comes this article, which is like a duplicate of many places in our region. All these little cities, they're all rejecting these things of the homogenization and the, you know, the making everything looking like the European streets and the high density, and they want everything to look clones of each other, right? With this Agenda 21. So here it says, Carmel Valley development rejected in vote. So, and I had heard about this. Now, there's something that you'll pick up on, and I want the rest of my audience to pick up on, and I should actually point it out to, I kept this article out because I'm going to hand it to this woman that I was trying to explain, and I'm going to go, this will explain my speech to you, and this is, you know, in a nutshell, in this small article. And you can find articles like this in Encinitas, in Solana Beach, in Oceanside, in Vista, Escondido, I don't care where you go, because it's all written by the same people. You know, I tried to explain that to her. But anyway, it's just amazing. This is the name of the project. You'll get a kick out of this, because every time I go through, whether it's Agenda 21 or Wild Dance Project or anything that's got that Marxist bent, they all have that same communist theme. The name of the development is One Paseo, like one, yeah, don't you love that? They don't even try to hide it anymore, but you know how many stupid people are out there? Holy smokes. Oh, yeah, so I think I'll highlight that too. I actually highlighted all this stuff, like the word smart growth, transportation corridors, rural areas, because I, you know, like I was trying to explain to her, the change the character of the city, mass transit, another smart growth one. And I explained to her that this whole gig is supposed to be done by 2030, 2050, because that's how long it's going to take them to implement it. And I highlighted the 2030 in this article, too. So maybe it will click with her. I doubt it, but at least I'm trying. One at a time, right? So anyway, it says, community leaders in Carmel Valley Thursday night rejected a mixed-use project that's been called a key test case for future growth in San Diego. Wonderful. While the Carmel Valley Community Planning's groups 11-2 vote against the 28-acre, thank God they did, acre One Paseo project is only advisory, it could persuade the San Diego Planning Commission and City Council to either reject the project or ask the developer to shrink it. See, that's where they make their problems. When you compromise, you have a handshake on something you know is not good, right?
Yep.
Okay, so city planners say the $1 billion project is a strong example of smart growth, in quotes. I don't know why. That would be my choice, but where dense developments get built along existing transportation corridors. The goal is adding enough housing for the city's growing population without new subdivisions, listen to this, sprawling into rural areas. They can't stand that. But during a three-hour public hearing attended by about 400 people, which is pretty good size, Thursday night, neighborhood leaders criticized the project as too intense for suburban Carmel Valley, 20 miles north of downtown. They said it would destroy the 35,000 resident community's character by putting nine-story office buildings and towers of condominiums and a regional shopping center on a relatively small parcel. Oh, that's what they do. That's their whole deal. City officials agree the project would worsen traffic congestion in the area and change the character of Carmel Valley. They say those drawbacks would be outweighed by the project's economic boost and role in helping to reduce San Diego's severe housing shortage. Why there's a housing shortage? Well, give it a little bit of time, because there won't be a housing shortage. There will be empty buildings, and it will look like Detroit by the time Brown gets done.
You mean to tell me that people are flocking in droves to California?
I think, no, this is how they sell this, Ron. They're selling
it. Well, no, I get it, but I would have to question, you know, the legitimacy.
Exactly. That would be my first question to these people. Are you kidding me?
Why aren't there construction developers out there trying to build more houses and get loans to develop, you know, tracts of land? And, you know, one of the things you should do, you guys really should do, I think, with the whole trailer park thing, is turn it around on the progressives and ask them why they want to displace thousands of elderly. Ask them if they've got something against elderly residents, because primarily that's who's living in a lot of those trailer parks, those mobile home parks.
And the retired veterans, absolutely. Oh,
yeah, so what do you guys have against the, you know, the retired vets and the elderly that you want to displace all these people or stick them in these high-rises? Why do you hate these people? I mean, just turn it around on them. That's their tactic.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the councilman's advice and focus on what I, you know, maybe to get through to the council members and possibly also educate some of the libtards in the chamber, and just keep it to the one or two projects like the one I'm reading about here, and also quote Reagan saying, you know, that you can't just look to government as your mother or father, and you can't look to government to solve solutions. And it doesn't necessarily always do that, even on a local level, because as Reagan said, it's not the solution, it is the problem. And he says, you can expound in your 3 minutes on these things. He says, but that's the only way you're going to get, and that's true. We have done that, Ron. We have talked about this. There's been articles
them, you know, what about the unintended consequences, the ones that you don't foresee?
Right. Oh, exactly. The ones who are really behind this, you know, the ones with the horns.
We know where the money's coming from. We know where it's
And we know where it's headed and what their agenda is. But I can't explain that in 3 minutes to these people. I couldn't do it in 30 minutes, you know, especially with some of them. It would take 3 days, but and that, I'd have to have a captive audience, and that's like something I don't want to do because that borders on fascism, you know. So you have to be careful with what you're
just
saying.
Tie them all to a chair and slap them with a wet rag, you know.
So
hey, it's waterboarding.
I know, it's like. Well, here's the other thing. That would, like I said, that would be my first question. If I were in that council meeting, but I didn't know about that one because I don't live in that area. I used to work over there. I knew people who had homes there. And it's beautiful. These people have money. They're targeting the moneyed areas, and they're also they're targeting prime land, whether it's Oceanside or there. They're doing it because we're that close to the coast, and they think this is all, you know.
Well, it's
like
the corridors. It's the corridors they're interested in, the main hub. And the main transportation routes, you know that.
True, that's part of it, because I-5 goes all the way from Canada to Mexico, and we're like, I'm a stone's throw from I-5, literally, if you think about it. But this is prime real estate, whether it's because we're so close to the coast, anything that's on that shoreline, because it is beautiful, but they'll destroy it, you know. And eventually, according to Agenda 21, you won't even be allowed to go in. If the surfers want to get on board with me, they better know what's coming, because they will not be allowed to surf. I'm telling you, if these guys have their way. So, like I said, that would be my first question is, on the housing shortage number, is what makes you think that, and I even talked about this in my own city council, what makes you think there's this flocking? I think they're using this. They're just people, you know, you tell the lie over and over again, and it starts to become truth to these people. So they obviously think that this is, you know, going to be just a paradise. Well, it may be for 5 or 10 years, but when you've got Mussolini Brown and the Sacramento Democrat crazies up there destroying this state, literally destroying it, I'm telling you, my predictions will come true. This whole state is going to look like Detroit when they get done with it, if they are allowed to keep.
You know, the minute you ask, where are all these people, they're going to start bussing them in.
Well, yeah, they bus them in from Texas, coming across the Rio Grande. I know that. Hell, we got almost 4 million right here in California. Because we have, 36 million people in this state alone, which is the exact population of about Canada. I mean, it's huge, but we've got so much dysfunction, and we've got nothing but Keynesian Marxists running everything. They're doing some fascistic stuff that would blow your mind. They actually shut down a winery. Get this. This is on Slater's show. You're going to love this one. Do you know, this is a time-honored tradition with wineries where you have, like, it's not an apprentice program or anything, but it's similar, where you have volunteers. You know how people volunteer to go to the library and they don't get paid because they're elderly and they're bored? Well, that's what this was similar to, where they have volunteers for harvest time, and in exchange, they take them on the tour of the winery and teach them about how to make wine. And now the state's saying you can't do that because this is their mafia taxes. This is a protection racket. They're not getting their cut. Cut of what? There's no exchange of money. That's the problem with these schmucks. Can you stand this? I mean, I'm telling you, if those people up in Napa have any brains, they'll take their vineyards or whatever, and they'll move them to the south of France or wherever the heck they may. I can't believe it.
Well, you know, a lot of those folks are very liberal, and they might start rethinking their politics.
I hope they do.
Go ahead.
I don't. This article real quick, and then we'll go jump back on it, because I got a couple things to. It's just amazing what's going on in even my own town. So it says, residents said they feel the city officials are asking too much of a sacrifice from Carmel Valley. Quote, you want us to put up with so much, and yet we get nothing. And planning group member, said planning group member Holly Kahn, contending that a bowling alley is the only new asset one Paseo would bring. And she said, are you willing to throw us under the bus for the benefit of San Diego? Planning group chairman Mr. White appeared the city was allowing economic benefits to trump its interest in allowing Carmel Valley leaders to preserve their community's ambiance. I mean, this goes through, the whole region is going through this. White and his colleagues also criticized Juan Paseo for lacking convenient access to mass transit, which they called essential to smart growth. City officials agreed the absence of transit was troubling, but noted that a rapid bus line is planned for the area by 2030. Oh, I wonder where they got that from. And I'll tell you, I'm not kidding. I even overheard this at my gym. Somebody was telling one of the trainers talking about, because they were talking about this very subject. I didn't get involved because I thought I got a few minutes to stay here. I don't want to go through, you know, my regime on Agenda 21. But they were talking about what they call the sprinter. There's these little rail lines that go through the cities and stuff and around the back. And so he asked him, he says, have you ever been stopped at the light and you can actually watch the sprinter go by? And when they're at those lights, they go kind of slowly. And you can count the heads on these cars, okay? And the last time I counted, there was a total of 10, maybe 10. And there's like four different boxcars that you can deal with. They're always low turnout. They're way more expensive to build and maintain than they're worth. They're still pushing it, even though it's failed. As you know, most progressives, anything that fails, they want more of it. So anyway, neighborhood leaders considered rejecting the project outright, but this person persuaded the group that it would be wiser to urge city officials to approve a less intense version of Juan Paseo. So that's what you're dealing with. I mean, so I'm hoping that this can clear up for her, which I doubt, because she's not playing with a full deck. However, we'll try to be nice and say, okay, here we go. Yeah, you can always tell the ones who aren't even open to discussion. At least some of the kids that I've actually
turned
around.
Well, at least she's asking questions. Yeah, I mean,
now, and she was taking notes. I thought, man, because there was a time when she didn't know me really well, and of course, she probably doesn't agree with a lot of my politics, but at least she said I didn't understand it. And I thought, you know, God, here's an opportunity. So I'm taking the opportunities. So here we are. Okay, go ahead. Finish what your first thought was, and then I'm going to...
Go ahead, because I'll get long-winded as usual.
Well, that's okay, because once I'm done with this, we can play and go through all the stuff you guys are talking about in the chat room, because it's very important we know these things as well. Just a quick thing on the previous page of this one, and where I got this was... God, who sent it to me? Campaign for Liberty, and this thing's so worn out. You should see it. It looks like one of the original documents from the Constitution, because it's so worn out from being in my purse, and I've read it so many times. And this is the one with the speech from Ron Paul on the House floor, and it was in 2004, and his remarks on the Constitution, which is absolutely amazing. I'm pretty sure you've read it or seen it. And this particular quote from James Madison was cool, and we've talked about it before. It says, do not separate text from historical background. If you do, you will have perverted and subverted the Constitution, which can only end in distorted, bastardized form of illegitimate government. And he was also one of the big proponents of private property, from intellectual all the way through to, you know, the dirt under your feet. Let me tell you, I love that guy. And there's several that are good, but... he's one of them. And, of course, we don't like Hamilton, and for other reasons. But,
well,
okay,
he was correct. I mean, that's absolutely what we have today, and we have bastardized the idea of legitimate government.
And there was something on one of the radio shows talking about those very things. I think 2 days in a row, and they were discussing which two amendments do you think were the worst, and there was, the callers were calling in, they said the 16th and the 17th, they didn't like those at all, and so they had discussions on that. But I mean, and then today they were talking about the bastardization of the Commerce Clause, and I mean, you and I could probably do another hour on that, but because what they've done, and we've allowed the Supreme Court to not be the least of the three branches, but we've elevated them, and we've been, you know, going through that nonsense since way before Roe v. Wade, which is another, you know.
Well, that's why Mobry versus Madison was such a pivotal case, and mm-hmm. the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at the time was actually cousins with Mobry. So everyone was certain that the court was going to side with Mobry, and he didn't.
Okay.
And he
wow.
didn't for a very specific purpose. He knew that his decision in that case was going to establish a precedent. And that precedent was that the Supreme Court could override or overrule or determine the actions of the executive.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ruled in favor of President Madison. And it was over an appointment by a prior president. The outgoing administration had appointed Mabry to a position that he felt he was entitled to keep. And the court said, no, sorry, the president doesn't have to abide by the past president's appointment.
Mm. Yeah, so, no, I mean, we could go through the litany of the amendments that we don't like after the 10th, because I think they should have stopped there, but, you know, that's just me. So this particular piece, like by Thomas Woods, he's the senior fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute, just give you a background there. But it says, this is regarding the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions, and they were drafted anonymously by James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, respectively, and were passed by the legislatures of those states in 1798. They were a response to the constitutionally offensive Alien and Sedition Acts of that year, to be sure, but they were much more than that. The claims advanced in these important documents were later assimilated into American political culture, such that for decades afterwards, appeals to the principles of 98 were widely recognized and understood. Those principles were straightforward. The federal government possessed only those powers the states had delegated to it in the Constitution, with the states and the people retaining for themselves all powers not so delegated. This was uncontroversial enough. The Tenth Amendment, after all, said as much. The controversy derived from the further claim that the states were not bound to enforce any federal law that sought to exercise a power not delegated to the federal government. This way, the states could resist unconstitutional laws without needing to have recourse to the more extreme remedy of secession, or possibly Article 5, but that's another story. Follow-up resolutions in 1799 in Kentucky expressly introduced the word nullification, removed from the draft of the resolutions of 1798 into the discussion. Madison used the word interposition in the Virginia resolution.
Yep.
Yeah. Strained attempts to make Madison and Jefferson appear to be saying different things have largely come to naught. There is no obvious difference between nullifying a law and interposing to prevent its enforcement. See, we don't know these things. People have to start learning.
You've got to listen to Mike Church. He plays a clip every single day from one of his DVDs or CDs. Mm-hmm. Which is a meeting between Madison, Ooh. Jefferson, and another guy. And he's like, well, now, wait. Let's not word it that way. He says, why don't you interpose?
Mm-hmm.
An interposition. And they said, nullify. That's exactly what they were talking about, was nullification of federal overreach.
Yes. Which was supposed to be of the founders' original intent to be able to do, the states could do. In a synonymous pamphlet, an exposition of the Virginia Resolutions of 98, published in 1833, moreover, Judge Abel Upshur advanced a vigorous argument that the Virginia Resolutions had indeed proposed nothing short of nullification. The Virginia and Kentucky resolutions of 1798, were not well received by the other states, which either ignored them or, as in the case of Massachusetts, composed indignant replies, but actions speak louder than words. And within less than 10 years, the principles of 98 were being invoked by New England states who felt oppressed by the embargo and war policies of Southern-born presidents they believed to be out of touch with their concerns.
Yep.
Now we go to 1814. Massachusetts Congressman Daniel Webster told the House of Representatives that if the federal government should introduce military conscription, which he considered unconstitutional, then it would be up to the Massachusetts government to interpose its authority in order to prevent the execution of such an order. Nullification was not a sudden, ad hoc response on Jefferson's part to a particular constitutional problem. To the contrary, the philosophical roots of nullification extend at least to the Virginia Ratifying Convention of 1788. There, supporters of the Constitution assured skeptics that the federal government would possess only those powers expressly delegated to it, and that Virginia could be exonerated from any obligations to the new Union of States if that federal government attempted to exercise any powers beyond these. As the 1790s opened, Patrick Henry reminded his fellow Virginians of the promises as he denounced Alexander Hamilton's financial policies, I'm not surprised, which he considered unconstitutional. John Taylor of Caroline, an important early constitutional theorist and friend of Jefferson, argued during the 1790s that the state legislatures should review federal legislation for violations of the Constitution. The Virginia and Kentucky resolutions were merely the culmination of this line of political thought. Almost done. Notwithstanding the Constitution's fugitive slave clause, opponents of slavery pointed to numerous constitutional outrages in the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850. In 1859, the Wisconsin Supreme Court responded to claims of lax enforcement of the 1850 Act on the part of Wisconsin citizens. Its reply consisted of a word-for-word rendition of the Kentucky Resolutions of 1798. So therefore, the principles of 1798 yet lived. And so as you go through them, I mean, it sounds like the Articles of Confederation. It's like when I read them.
And that's the other guy that was with Madison and Jefferson was John Taylor of Caroline.
Okay.
And I cannot for the life of me remember the guy's name that during the Tariff Act, which was basically a blockade, it was impacting negatively the northern shipyards, uh-huh. You know,
right.
Boston, New York. And so you look at it, and it's from a merchant aspect. Suddenly, they were ready to secede. And so the shoe was on the other foot.
Right.
And I can't remember the guy's name that was leading up the battle cry in the northern states for secession. It wasn't John Jay, I don't think, but his name was Jay, something Jay. But it was a very interesting time when, as you said, you know, you've got the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions coming
mm-hmm.
out. Yeah, Patrick Henry, if you want to read two of the most brilliant people during that founding period, you should
mm-hmm.
get a hold of anything written by Patrick Henry.
Okay.
And anything written by another guy who refused to vote in the Constitutional Convention, oh, my God, and of
can't
course I knew
the name.
This would happen. I can't remember his name, and he's actually a friend of mine that I work with out here is a distant relative of his, but he left the convention. He refused to participate.
Wow.
Entirely. But Patrick Henry stood on the floor of the convention, and he asked the question. And it's the same question I would ask today. If you go back to the Constitutional Convention,
right.
the charge that they were placed with as representatives of their respective
uh-huh.
states was to perfect or amend the Articles of Confederation.
Right.
Now, the Articles of Confederation deal wholly with the states. They
sure.
do not deal with individuals at all.
Okay.
So when they proposed We the People, Patrick Henry asked them, just point blank, who in the hell do you think you are to propose that you speak for We the People?
Got it.
He said, now, I suppose that one could claim that you speak for We the People, but as far as I'm aware, there has been no polling of all the people of the states. He said, indeed, you could be nothing more than the states because you represent those states. And
right.
so this federal government, this federation, would
mm-hmm.
be a federation of states. But what you're proposing is going to be nothing more than a giant national government.
Yes, yes.
which will strip the rights of the states.
Exactly.
And you're empowering an almighty president, which is just another way of saying a king.
Right. Wasn't that one of the reasons they demanded that that states' rights 10th Amendment was in there with the other nine before they would sign on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that was a thing that, you know, Virginia and some of the other states said, unless we have a Bill of Rights laying out very specifically, we're not touching this thing.
Yep.
We are not going to touch it.
That's right. And those were ratified in 1791.
George Mason.
Okay.
I knew I'd remember his name eventually. George Mason is the other guy. And he refused to participate. He went home to Virginia. He said, "The hell with you guys." He lost freaking mind.
That time, I remember on one of your shows, and this is going back a few months, quite a few months, but you actually read that full speech of Patrick Henry prior to when he says, "Give me liberty or give me death," because it's got stuff in there that people need to know. I have a copy of that, and I do believe it was in, I think it was in Original Intent by David Barton. But now, think what you will of him. At least he goes and finds the truth and puts it in print, you know, gets the whole thing.
That is the most powerful speech I think I've ever read.
Oh, my
read.
God. That was, in fact, I may just delve into that next week on mine, because it's like there's so much. And I know that these guys are all dead and buried and all that stuff. But you know what? Like we talked about before, when Dinesh D'Souza says it's not the era of agri-farming, it's not the era of slavery, it's the idea, it's the principles that are time-tested over centuries that were biblical, that's where they got it from, that this is the way it works. When you see something like fascism or communism and it fails every single time, when you see true free markets and capitalism, and for the short period of time we had it, you know, that works so well, like you said, I mean, can you imagine if we were truly free, how amazing our lives could be?
And we have completely embraced, as ironic as it is, we have completely embraced the idea of socialism in our monetary system. It drives me absolutely
Ron,
insane.
They're doing monetary, they're doing it in every aspect of our whole existence.
Sure, it's become so pervasive in our entire existence now.
Our school system, everything.
But it absolutely started in our monetary system.
They're doing it with the Agenda 21, the whole idea of this is socialism. This is, I mean, every time when they talk about we don't have our bike lanes, and now they just passed a law. Good old Jerry Brown just said, law is starting and effective immediately. We have to worry about the bicyclists if they don't have their own curb deals, that we have to give them 3 feet of space, you know, of berth. And it's like, excuse me? So my argument to these clowns who are all for this Agenda 21 and doing all these things with the roundabouts and the rest of it, I'm going, you think that it's so important to have bicycles and not breathe whatever you think you're breathing, which in California you ain't breathing nothing, believe me. My sky's as blue as it can be. I says, you move to Holland. You know, go there.
I
love your bicycle.
I want to tell you an awesome tactic for the bicyclist or the bicyclist. And I don't have anything against them per se, but I lived in Colorado. And they all think they're practicing for the damn Tour de France.
I know.
One thing you can do, especially if you have a small front-wheel drive car, is make sure that your emergency brake, parking brake, is working very well. And when you come up behind one silently, slip your car into neutral and just snatch the parking brake and make the tires squall. You will see these people hit the curb, fly over fences.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely hysterical. So, I'm sorry. I was just trying to maintain my 3 foot area, you know.
I know. Guess who would land up in jail here in this state if that happened, if I did that? Oh, my God. It would be me. I tell you. Anyway, so I just wanted to enlighten you guys with some of this stuff because – And I know that my audience is just amazing. You guys read like I do. And after my meeting with the councilman and some of the things I had told him that I had gone through, you know, like I mentioned Hayek. I don't know. Anyway, and I said that I was reading Adam Smith's book, I says, which I found out by Wikipedia was published in 1776, that he was a a Scottish economist and a moral philosopher. So anyway, I just hope that he understands that I'm better read than 9-10. I think he understood that, but I
was going to say, I think he actually wrote that in 1759, but.
But actually, I think the first publication, and the only reason I knew that is because I had to Google it, because my book is like a paperback, and there was no references to publications, and I thought, okay, well, this must be old, so I better go check it out. But I knew it was back there. I just didn't know how far back it went. And I do believe Hayek's Road to Serfdom was published somewhere probably 80 to 84 years ago. And like I said, when I read it on the air and all these things I read on the air, it is so relevant today, because when it's timeless and it's true, it doesn't lose its relevance, just like Jesus' words. Amen. So I'm going to do a little bit of song. Thank you so much for calling in, because it's so much fun to kind of like banter about these thoughts with people that can understand and try to, you know, give me a good sounding board. And I'm going to play a little song and get ready for this meeting. I want to thank you guys, Mikey B, Yo, FT's gone now, and Ron, of course, for calling in and everything else. And we will see you tomorrow for Terry's show. I think she's ready to go. Hopefully she can do that. And Mikey B, got to be a good one. I think he's got some great guests. You can type that in the chat room for us.
I think Terry is taking some time off.
She might. If she doesn't show up, that's great. But at
she had sent me an email asking me to delete her shows for the rest of the month.
Got it. Okay.
She was having trouble getting in and that kind of thing.
Getting in,
so,
I know.
Sorry.
BTR has been doing some weird stuff, I know. And Mikey B, 9 p.m. Eastern, we've got to check him out. I know that he had two guests lined up or something. So hopefully that will happen. And I'm excited. You guys have been great. God bless. A little bit of song. And from Poker Face. Let's see how this goes.
God bless.
God bless. Thanks.
Too many people in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time that people take the country back through their representative government.
Politician living on that hill, living in that life of luxury on We the People's Bill. Don't have a clue how the other half lives, and that is a shame. It's time to stop the tyranny. You keep pushing through your bills. Going for a revolution, going for it now. It's time to save our Constitution while we still got the
Thanks so much. Yo and Nick, good night. See you tomorrow night. God bless.